grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 311 of the Dudes and Beer podcast, coming to you live from Austin, Texas. I am Chris Jordan, your host. Man, it has just been a wild ride of a new year, guys. You know, it's amazing to know that our world is still in the state that it is. It's amazing to know that we're, as a people, still in the state that we are and still in a harried state of mind. So the fact that so many of y'all take the time out of your day to listen to Dudes and Beer, take the time out of your schedule to go out and do things like download the all-new Dudes and Beer app. Well, all new. I mean, we had an app before, but this one's like 18 times better. It's got the RSS feed on there. You can listen live to the show while we're live on air. You can chat in questions to the chat line. You can do all kinds of fun stuff. You can carry on side conversations, even a tip calculator. How do I get it, Chris? That's what you're asking. Well, stop on by dudesandbeer.com. There's the link right there on the right-hand side. Or you can stop on by dudesandbeer.com/app. That will take you directly to the app page. There's the Android app right there. Just click the picture, and it's going to give you a little download link. Once that pops up, click Save As. Goes to your mobile device, open it up from your downloads, and click install. If you've already got it, follow the same process and then approve the reinstall. We will be having updates coming soon because, of course, right now we have the source code for all of you orchard dwellers out there, but we do not have the X code. So we are working on generating the X code to get things onto the market for you guys. While you're online checking that out, do make sure to go on by the Dudes and Beer store. Check out the amazing book by our guest this evening, Crossing the Crevasse. We will be talking to the author of this book, W. Wallace Wagner, here in just a moment, discussing the topic of UFOs in the Bible. One of my favorite topics, we just connected a few minutes ago and literally sat and talked for like 30 minutes about this topic before I was like, hey, we should really start recording. We're missing part of the show. So that's how excited I am. I cannot wait. We will be talking to W. Wallace Wagner, author of Crossing the Crevasse, right after this message from our sponsor, Podcast Cadet. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies, Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today. And let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultation and workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code DUDES20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website, again, is podcastcadet.com. And every one had four faces, and every one had four wings, but each one had four faces, and each of them had four wings. That comes to you directly from Ezekiel 1:6, folks.
Two different translations, King James, as well as another there. Welcome back. Thank you so much, Podcast Cadet. We'll be talking tonight about Ezekiel, about Genesis, all kinds of stuff. If you've got a Bible handy, if you're a Bible type, go grab it. If you're not, sit back and enjoy, because this is really, full disclosure for all that don't know, I was a Roman Catholic seminarian my first year in college. I taught religion, spirituality, confirmation. I was assistant youth minister for many, many years after that, fourth degree Knight of Columbus, all kinds of stuff. My faith and my spirituality are two different sides of the same coin. They are related, but they are not dependent on one another. That's a very complex thought to get into. But I think that it's very important for people to understand, because when you try to start getting into things like Ezekiel and Ezekiel's chariot that lifted him off, really the second person to be assumed body and soul into heaven, Enoch being the first. So when you're talking about these things, it's important sometimes to step away and maybe flip the coin from the side of faith over to the side of spirituality. Because much like science and how we talk about the science of religion, or the religion of science on this show, there is the science of religion also, is what I meant to say. Whereas a lot of scientists think like what they know is the absolute and it cannot change. A lot of people think the same thing about the Bible, and that's really funny because, like I told the guest before the show, my faith, my spirituality, two flip sides of the same coin, both very different. But the Bible is not a book written by a single author, written by a single culture, nor written at the same time. And when you put that trifecta together, it comes down, as Bishop James Cloud and I have discussed so many numerous times, it comes down to interpretation, interpolation is what it comes down to. It comes down to understanding the cultures. It comes to understanding what they ate, how they lived, all kinds of things, to understand how they reference things and why they reference them. Wallace W. Wagner, welcome to the show. Author of Crossing the Crevasse. Crevasse, how are you doing this evening?
Very well, thank you, Chris. I'm glad to be here.
I am so entirely glad to have you here. As I told you before the show, as my audience knows and any new listeners now know, this is one of literally my favorite topics in the world. And I mean, these are things that I would literally challenge folks with when I was in the seminary. Like, I'm sorry, aren't we all like taking philosophy classes and, you know, things like that as a mandatory? Like, how come we can't conceptualize something else here? So to me, it was a strange thing to not be able to, so much so that even in my junior year of high school, I did a report about UFOs and UFOs in the Bible and in ancient cultures across the globe. So, yeah, like that, this has been smooth since I was an eighth grade freshman in high school, and I'm a 45-year-old man. So this has been an all-consuming passion my whole life.
Well, the Bible is full of UFO stories and encounters. You just need to know where to look. In the past, you'd often read over them and not even realize.
Sure.
And you seldom get anything from behind the pulpit as to what it might be or what the UFO is, or even that it is a UFO. You normally get something, I guess what you would say would be an agenda, lots of times from behind the pulpit, or something that's pre-planned. And you're like Reverend Michael Carter has said, you are given the answers before you even get to ask the question.
Yep. Yep. And and granted, you know, there's of course Catholic dogma, all kinds of stuff, dogma, doctrine. But we're talking about even Protestant faith, even Protestant religion here.
Yep, we are. And, you know, interestingly, as far as the Catholics go, they pretty much have a much more of an open mind than the Protestants.
Yeah.
I mean, coming out of the Vatican recently, that it's, you know, the universe is full of life and it really doesn't affect our faith.
That's right. That's right. The fact that it would only be one more wonder of God, the Creator.
Exactly.
We are not singular in the creation of the universe. And the Pope himself has come out and said that there would be no ethical quandary, there would be no theological quandary between the sacrificial act of Christ and UFO existence. One would not negate the other, basically. So it would not affect the faith. As you said, it may affect some people's faith, but the faith of the church, capital C, in the version of the Holy See that it is, no, absolutely not. And yeah, they were really one of the first churches to come out and say that openly.
That is right.
So what was it that brought you, because this, I mean, of course, people have strange passions, people have strange interests, but what was it that brought you specifically to studying UFOs in the Bible? Because that's a pretty specific niche.
Well, I was a lot like you. I always read between the lines and always had the tough questions and never got any real answers. But I grew up in a Methodist Southern Baptist background and conservative Baptist. And, you know, when you have your own sighting right over your head, it can cause you to back up and reevaluate. And with me, that's exactly what happened. I had my own sighting in 2016. It was the white Tic Tac variety right over my head. I saw it for about 3 seconds or so, and it appeared as a solid object, Chris. It had no windows, no nacelles, no exhaust, no method of lift. Wow. The brightest white you could ever imagine, and it was oblong shape. And it was there, and then, you guessed it, it wasn't there. It either took off so fast or it cloaked.
Wow. Wow.
And having seen that, with my interest in the questions in the past anyway, it made me back up and reevaluate everything.
Yeah.
And that started opening up the Bible for me in a way that it had never been taught to me in the past. And all of a sudden, there's UFO encounters everywhere. You just have to look for them, whether it's New Testament or Old Testament. I mean, I don't even talk about Ezekiel much because that's pretty much a given now. If that wasn't a UFO, then we're not on the same planet.
Yeah.
No pun intended. But the UFOs are just mentioned everywhere. One of the best places you can read about crafts in the Bible is in 2 Kings chapter 6, specifically verses 15 through 17. It's a story with Elisha, and I'm sure you probably know this, not Elijah, but Elisha.
Yep.
And it goes like this: when the servant of the man of God got up and went out early the next morning, an army with horses and chariots had surrounded the city. "Oh, no, my lord, what shall we do?" the servant asked. And Elisha says, "Don't be afraid. Those who are with us are more than those who are with them." And Elisha prayed, and the servant's eyes were opened so that he could see. And when the servant opened his eyes, he looked around, and all the hills were full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. Now, we can really talk about this for a few minutes, because those crafts were already there, and a non-prophet human could not see them. And when Elisha prayed, the eyes were opened, and he sees all these chariots of fire. And we have Von Däniken to thank for the definition of chariots of fire. Without a doubt, they are crafts or UFOs. And that's one of the best places that you will really see cloaked crafts, is that in that passage in 2 Kings. And I'm going to skip over real fast to the New Testament. How many times have we all read Revelation 4:1? It goes, after this we looked up, or I looked up, and before me was a door standing open in heaven. That never clicked before. A door doesn't stand opening in heaven. And the voice that I heard sounded like a trumpet. Come up here, and I will show you what must take place after this. That door opening in heaven is definitely a craft. John went up.
Interesting.
He was flown around in that craft and was shown the heavens. And before we go any further, Chris, and I'll quit talking here in just a minute.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
I focus in my book on three words. Three words you have to know. Stars, spirits, and glory. You have to understand those three words. They have multiple meanings. Often when you read the word spirit, it means a craft. And before your audience says, well, you're crazy, then I would say you need to read Zechariah, because he almost verbatim says spirits coming out of the bronze mountains are crafts.
And you know, that is also one of the many interpretations that many modern UFO scholars consider as an interpretation of the Holy Spirit descending at the moment of baptism.
Exactly. I was going to bring that up. I mean, you can't see a spirit. A spirit is colorless, formless.
Yeah.
And for to see the spirit coming down, and then Yahweh always speaks from a craft, whether it's the transfiguration or whether it's on the top of Mount Sinai.
Well,
and on and on.
And, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because that would make a, and I'm just spitballing here. I'm just throwing something against the wall. But if you really start to think about the triune nature of Father, Son, Spirit, if you look at it in that way, where, yes, there is the universal consciousness, then there is Son, the man, then Spirit, the from the beyond. That's a pretty interesting take on that.
I think so. And how many times
the Father, of course, being that shared knowledge between the two.
Yep.
So that's really interesting. I had never really considered that, despite having known about the interpretation of spirit as a craft.
The word glory is one of the hardest words to decipher and come up with a definition for. It means light, a radiant light, a vibrant, almost blinding light that can be focused into a beam or just radiant, to where it even hurts your eyes to look at it. And how many times have we read about glory?
Yeah, and about
people think it has to do with the majesty of God, but what if it has to do with, because he's so enlightened and so bright that Moses had to hide his face
yep.
in the cleft of the rock as the glory went by.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the glory shone down around them, the shepherds in the field that night, shone down from heaven around the shepherds, just like the spotlight.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are, like you said, so many. I mean, even whenever you start going into Exodus, the column of fire by night and cloud by day that led the Jewish people through the Exodus.
There was a craft involved, or maybe more than one.
Well, and explain that a little bit for those that may not be familiar, Wallace.
Well, think of it this way. When you have the lighted pillar, that's the same thing as glory, glory yep. streaming down, and there's always clouds. We can't talk about UFOs in the Bible without clouds. There's always these clouds hiding something, and there's a voice normally wherever there's a cloud. And you get to the Red Sea, and the sea is parted, but the Bible says it's due to, you know, a wind. But the water is standing up on both sides and they cross on dry land. How can the wind come from two different directions so strong
yeah.
to make the water? I mean, it makes no sense. You have to understand this makes no sense. That same craft is involved some way, somehow, forcing the water apart so they can walk across. Yeah. Another interesting word, of course, is stars. People back then, let's use the Hebrews, for example. They only had 7,000 words compared to our 200,000 words in the English language yeah. today. So those 7,000 words were often interchanged. One word could have multiple different uses for multiple different things.
And letters or numbers.
Exactly, exactly. So let's think of a star a second. Anything they would see in the sky that was a light was called a star. Now, some were stars, but some were not stars. Example. Judges, chapter 5. You probably know this as the Song of Deborah and Barak. These verses often take off in multiple directions, with the commentaries and the expositors missing the big point. Well, I'm just going to read it. The stars fought from heaven. That right there tells you that's a red flag. Stars don't fight. How do stars fight? They fought from their courses. They fought against Sisera. How do stars fight from their courses? It's because they weren't stars. And then in verse 23, curse Meroz, said the angel of the Lord. Utterly curse its inhabitants because they did not come to the help of the Lord. And you have all these commentaries saying, well, Meroz is a geographical location. Now, we don't know where it is, but it must mean a location or a city or a town. Well, not to the Jewish people. Meroz is the celestial body, according to their Talmud. And Meroz is possibly a planet. So the way to read that is, curse the planet Meroz because their inhabitants did not help the stars fighting against Sisera. And I mentioned the Talmud just then. You may know this, Chris, but I want to make sure your listeners do, that the Jewish Talmud specifically says God has 18,000 worlds to manage. Now, you think about that, 18,000. Furthermore, seven of them are earth-like. So we talked about the Protestants and the Catholics. You know, the Jewish people, when disclosure happens, will probably just take it as, well, you know, we've kind of known that for a long time. That's my take on it. Are you with me? I've lost you.
Sorry about that.
Okay.
The Talmud gives us so much whenever you go through and start reading it. And whenever you go through and start especially reading books of Jewish mysticism, things like that. It's really interesting. And I brought up a while ago on screen a commentary on the heavens according to the ancient Jewish people and according to the ancient Greeks, things like that, that show the pillars of the earth, the underworld, the firmament, which they literally thought was just like a veil over the sky, you know? And like you said, the lights were there. So really, really interesting, especially whenever you're talking about the lights moving. Even though these were simple people, they were a nomadic people. They were people that lived out in the desert. They were no fools when it came to astronomic observation. When it came to, like, that constellation comes up an hour before sunrise. You know, people who planted, people who kept animals, people who travel as a nomadic people tend to know these kind of things. They know how to find north by the stars. So when they're talking about this, and of course you could make the argument that the stars moving from their firmament could be a celestial happening, like a meteor shower, something like that. But the description of how they move against each other is different. And
if the Book of Jasher has another interesting thing with stars, Book of Jasher is one of those books that didn't make it into the Bible, but it's mentioned twice. The night that Abraham was born, people saw stars moving around, and one big star move across the heavens and absorbed another star. And they interpreted that this Abraham was going to be mighty and have multiple generations following him. That's in the Book of Jasher.
And, you know, whenever you... Let's start going, I guess, a little bit into... Because a lot of people may not necessarily be, of course, familiar with the story of Ezekiel. And I don't want to spend too much time on it because, like you said at the beginning, it really is one of the most well-known biblical sections. It's one of those where even biblical scholars who are not, quote, hip to the UFO phenomena or the paranormal are like, yeah, that's a weird one.
Well, without a doubt, Ezekiel saw a craft. And it really starts up in chapter one, probably about verse four. As I looked, behold, a high wind was coming from the north, and a great cloud with fire flashing intermittently and a bright light around it. And in the midst, something like gleaming metal in the midst of the fire. And what you're looking at on your backdrop right there is an artist's rendition of exactly what Ezekiel saw. Within it were figures resembling four living beings. They had a human form. Each of them had four faces and four wings. Just on and on. Without a doubt, that was a craft. And the interesting thing to me was what he saw inside compared to what John saw, you know, it's very similar. What Ezekiel saw versus what John saw in Revelation, the color emerald and beryl is involved. There's a throne.
Yep.
There's a rainbow, lightning. It's very similar.
Yeah. And it talks about the great wind that is disturbed, something like a vault sparkling like crystal and awesome. Under the vault, their wings were stretched out one toward the other, and each had two wings covering its body. When the creatures moved, I heard the sound of their wings, like the roar of rushing waters, like the voice of the Almighty, like the tumult of an army. When they stood still, they lowered their wings. It's always been one of my favorite books of the Bible because, yeah, it's kind of like when you read the account of Jacob's ladder.
I make mention of that in my book, Chris. Jacob's ladder was very interesting as well.
Yeah.
There you have God on top with the angels going up and down the ladder, going to and from the earth. And I make a point to say that angels use crafts also. There's one place in Daniel chapter 9 where Gabriel flies in swiftly that time. And I asked the question to a Sunday school class, do you think the angel's just flying around freehand in the air, or do you think it's a craft? Well, that was a Southern Baptist Sunday school class, and everybody said free in the air. So that was the end of that conversation.
And probably now the last time you were at that church, you're asked to come there.
Now I realize that it was definitely a craft. So
somebody did not make it to the fish fry after.
True. Very true.
You can just keep the dish. I'll see y'all later. Take care, guys. It is hard. And I mean, I know that they're, like I said, I know many, many men that wear collars, not just for the Catholic Church, but for other churches as well. And I've had these discussions. Some of them are more open-minded to the concept than others are. And it really is hard because it gets into a conversation of faith. For some people, it gets into a conversation of questioning their whole paradigm. And
that is true. And that's one of the reasons I wrote my book. I want disclosure to be not threatening to people who accept everything, you know, literally.
Well, and let's get into, in the last 30 minutes here, crossing the crevasse, the process, like you're saying, the reasons you wrote the book. Because, I mean, there are, of course, researchers who just, like, our guest Graham Phillips. There's like five books over there in the Dudes and Beer Library that are Graham Phillips. Because that man just churns out work, man. But with this first piece, what was it that really drove you to start writing it? And what was it that kept you moving while you were writing it?
Of course, I had my own sighting. That was a catalyst. And that's what caused me to back up and really evaluate, going from just having an open mind to believing and knowing.
Sure.
You know, I have so many friends that if something were to happen, let's say we had a visitation tonight, nationwide or known the worldwide, by an alien race that did not look anything like us. Because they don't look anything like us, people would think that they must be from the devil, because we are made in God's image. But what if the universe is full of beings and entities, many of them malevolent and some malevolent, but yes. many are friendly. And what if they're just making a first contact? I mean, we can act like H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds back in 1938 and everybody panics. Or we can follow what the Brookings Institution says, that we just really can't handle the truth. It would disrupt society.
Yeah, yeah.
Or we can accept it with open arms. And in a broad sense, I'm trying to get people, if they read the book, to expand their mind just a little bit, open up, and realize it could have lots of things could have alternate meanings.
Yeah.
And if you can open up your mind and at least acknowledge this may be true, then when disclosure happens, whenever form or whenever it happens, it will be so much less threatening and panicking for these people. That's really what got me to write the book as it's written. And I cover the 6,000-year-old Earth theory. I cover some prophecy, such as crop circles, which is an interesting topic in itself. We could spend a whole show on that. UFOs, of course, and some of the early beliefs in the church that often people don't even know about.
Yeah.
I put a separate chapter in the book, Don't Be a Sunday Christian, meaning don't go to church on Sundays and let what you hear from behind the pulpit become your reality.
Yeah.
And then not open your Bible again until next Sunday.
Yep.
I mean, you're not going to get anywhere doing that. You're going to let someone else's agenda become your reality.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Even whenever I taught religion and spirituality, like I told you before the show, there used to be a few parents that would have issue with, you know, maybe some of the information their kid came home with, you know, like, why aren't you teaching my kid to be a Catholic? And I'm like, technically, you're the one that made that promise. My job is to teach them spirituality, how to, like, interpret this word, how to take what happens in that building with people of like mind for 1 hour and carry that into their world for the rest of their life. That's my job.
Like, I understand.
It's different whenever you take a step back and whenever you realize that, yeah, sometimes you really have to give people the information so that they can make their own educated choice. That was my job, was to make sure that any choice they made spiritually was an educated choice for them. Not something that was because of the dogma or doctrine. Whenever we were talking about dogma or doctrine, we'll talk about that. But if we're just talking, we're going to talk about the rest of your life and how to take care of that. And that goes well beyond dogma and doctrine.
Well, I make a point to show some inconsistencies, and I'm being politically correct using that term.
Just a few?
Just a few.
Just a few?
Well, actually, there's more than a few.
How many fingers and toes you got, Wallace?
And then I even point out a blatant mistake. And it's funny, the commentary people would say, well, you know, that's just a bad transmission of a text. Or, you know, that's just a corrupt verse. They just can't get their hands and arms around it to say it's wrong.
Yeah.
So if it's wrong, how many wrongs does it have to take to prove that the Bible is not an error? I mean, it's got problems. And the reason it has problems is because it's been manipulated so many times and translated and rewritten. I could just go on and on, but I put a lot of it in the book.
Absolutely.
As a starting point. And I don't want people to think that I'm a Bible basher.
No,
or I've limited God, because I haven't. Jesus taught honesty, yep. And I'm just being honest. None absolutely. Of it is made up.
Well, and unfortunately, Wallace, a lot of people, and this is no fault of their own, because of where I went to college, because I was a Roman Catholic seminarian, a lot of the things I had to learn were church history, things like that, reading the documents of Vatican I, that kind of stuff.
Some of the early church fathers, like Origen,
who
had his own belief in reincarnation, which was accepted within the Christianity for hundreds of years
until the Arian revolt and the fight of Augustine against Arianism. Absolutely.
And he was called one of the finest minds the church ever had.
And he's brilliant. Like, still to this day, like, philosophy is, I can't read novels. Novels are really hard for me. But give me an instruction manual or philosophy, because philosophy reads like an instruction manual. So I'm good with it. And Augustine's one of my favorites, because he really does just say, like, we are just horrible, horrible people. Can we all just learn to be okay that you're a horrible person? And he's horrible, and you're horrible in your way, and I'm definitely horrible.
We're all horrible.
We're all horrible. It really is one of those, like we said before the show, even the Old Testament, by the time the church got a hold of it, things had been removed by the high priests, all kinds of stuff. You already had the redacted version with the Jewish Apocrypha taken out. And then once the Catholic Church came together, started writing the first, started compiling, not writing, compiling the first version of the Bible, they took what was Orthodox Judaism's text and called it the Old Testament. Now, that didn't include the Talmud anymore. That didn't include, a lot of stuff. The Catholics kept things like the Book of Enoch, Daniel. Granted, there's a part of Daniel that ain't in there. That's kind of locked away. But it's interesting to know that even the New Testament, when it was compiled, was one of those... okay, we are trying to solidify this as a religion now, everybody. It's no longer just a loose philosophy that we all thought this dude was cool. So, as we're doing that, how many people read this one? Just hands up in the room. Okay, 10 out of 100 of us? Let's put that one on the maybe table. You know? And that's literally what happened. It wasn't any, like, really huge... crazy, let's do this. They had decided on what the Trinity was to fight Arianism, to say this is the absolute Trinity, this is the teaching, this is what it is. And once you decided that and had a couple of other doctrinal teachings and dogmatic teachings, the books that you chose had to follow those teachings.
Exactly.
And if they didn't follow the teaching, and especially if they didn't follow the teaching that you were trying to pass on to everybody, and if they did not encompass what the greater realm of Christianity as a broken community was reading and teaching amongst themselves, then they didn't include it. Things like the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, the Gospel of Mary, Gospel of Thomas, where Christ goes to the East and learns with Buddhist monks, you know, things like that.
Well, I believe that did happen, but that's another story for another day.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We'll definitely have to have that story, Wallace.
Let me tell you about one of the big compromises that was made that I really point out. You know, the old Hebrew text used the word Elohim some 2,500 times.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what Elohim meant, of course, the I am indicates pluralism, but it also meant males and females.
That's right.
And guess what? When you read the first few sentences in Genesis and you see the us, nowadays you're taught, well, that's just Jesus and the Holy Spirit. When in fact, the word Elohim was used and God's plural, both male and female, created the earth.
Yeah.
And now Elohim has been taken out altogether. Yep. You might find one little instance referring to a hill somewhere, a physical hill, but there's nothing to do with gods anymore. So Elohim has been removed from the Bible altogether.
The closest thing that you might find is the reference to the Nephilim.
Another pluralism.
In Genesis.
But that word is not even in most Bibles. It's in a few, but there's so many Bibles now. There's like over 50 English Bibles, and they're all a little bit different.
Yep.
And I make a point in the chapter. I talk about the flood and giants, and the earth's not 6,000 years old. It's much older. But you talk about Genesis chapter 6. I use the NIV.
Yep. New International
Standard, the King James, and the Living Bible, and they all four, they're trying to tell the same thing, but you get four different stories.
Yep.
With the flood, with the giants, with the Nephilim, how it all worked out. And some of it's just a little change, a period here to there, or a comma, but it changes the whole meaning.
Yep.
You can't make heads or tails out of it. Which one do you choose?
Yeah, and it really does, it can confound a lot of people. I know definitely a lot of people that have moved away from faith because of such things. I wouldn't say that that was my case, but for me, it was just the fact of, once again, understanding as much as I could the culture and history of the people of the time.
Mm-hmm.
The culture of the place where they live, that all happens in footnotes, people. go read some footnotes. Go read, like, you know, my God, his name just left my head. The Jewish historians, things
Josephus.
Like that. Josephus, thank you. People like that, where, you know, they really do almost take you through a trip down the street sometimes. Mm. And let you really see how people were living and what was happening.
The same Josephus who saw a sky army back in 65 AD.
Right? And that's just it. Like, there is even going into stuff like Pliny the Elder, they talk about the same kind of stuff. So, the Jewish people were by far not the only culture at the time to think about such things. The Mesopotamians, of course, were greatly into such concepts. Epic of Gilgamesh immediately comes to mind whenever you're talking about a reference to the Ark.
That's in my appendix, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the Ark of Noah and the Epic of Gilgamesh and the story of the flood are almost
identical.
Yeah. I mean, like, not
the Epic of Gilgamesh was 500 years before Moses.
Yeah. 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 Written 500 years before, and definitely one of those that, and granted, we aren't saying that it's like, hey, yeah, look at this. The themes follow the same kind of plot line, and the way that things play out in the plot line are the same.
Exactly.
You know, the, hey, let's go get all these critters are the same. let's build this big thing.
When you talk about critters, you know, young kids today are taught they went on the ark two by two. Unfortunately, if you don't read a few more verses later, you realize that, you know, is it two by two or is it twos and sevens?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It can't be both. So one of them's wrong.
Not if you want to propagate a species.
Very true.
There's a reason why the command was be fruitful and multiply. Go spread your seed and multiply.
Well, you know, what you say is very true, but I make some comments about that in my book as well. Some of God's one-liners.
Yeah.
Like, there'll always be hot and always be cold.
Yep. Yeah. But don't be lukewarm, whatever you do.
No, there's nobody on the fence. It has to be one side or the other.
You go to almost the direct opposite side of the book, and it's like, don't be lukewarm.
Yeah. So in our limited time we have left, Chris, I'm just curious, what do you think the Nephilim were? I mean, the two big theories are either they were the sons of God who came down, or they were the actual giants that were produced as offsprings.
I am an offspringer. That is technically what technically there was the Nephilim that were the fallen, and then the B'nai Nephilim, which were the sons of the fallen. Those were the ones that were the sons of the fallen and man mixed together.
Okay.
I wrote a whole album about that years ago. That's how much of a geek I am for this kind of stuff. But the Nephilim, it's hard because I definitely believe in the spiritual world. I definitely believe in my God. He's not like a dude up in a chair watching. If he is a dude up in a chair watching things, it's George Byrne straight up. He was just here for a larf, you know.
Maybe he's watching all of creation.
He was just here for an 85-year larf. That's all.
But, well, I want to tell you though, when I wrote this book with the emphasis on all the UFOs, it's actually increased my faith.
Mm. How so?
It certainly did not decrease it, and it's even made God more powerful and more loving. And a bigger God than he was before.
Thank you. And I mean, that has been my experience in life spiritually, is that my relationship with my capital G God, I'm not talking about like the Christ up on a cross. I'm not talking about the church. I'm not talking about my relationship with the Eucharist. I'm talking about my relationship with God, the universe. The thing which moves all has only grown and grown deeper over the years as I study these things, as I find these things out.
Exactly. And even though there's wars in heaven, and which tells you there's both good and bad out there, if God did not want us here right now, we would not be here.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like,
so somebody's protecting us.
It wouldn't be hard.
Just like Ephesians says, we're battling things we don't see. Mm-hmm. Dark principalities, spirits.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're out there.
With that being said, Wallace, what would be some words of advice for people, not only as they read Crossing the Crevasse, but as they go down their own word journey through the Bible, let's put it that way, you know, because it really is, I find the Bible to be the fact of personal interpretation, you know, the way you read a verse, even the way you literally read a verse will change from the time you're 20 to the time you're 45.
Oh, you're exactly correct. Like you can read the same verse 10 times and the light doesn't go off until the 11th time.
Well, and even the inflection in your voice, even the way in which you read it and the way that your brain processes it and understands it as you read it, you know, that is changed. So, yeah, what for you would be some advice as people are reading Crossing the Crevasse for the first time and really starting to crack the nut of UFOs in the Bible?
I would keep in mind that when you come across the word spirit, for sure, have an open mind for that.
Yeah.
And insert the word craft and see if that doesn't make more sense.
Mm.
I would say that would be first and foremost.
Just don't put of St. Louis after it.
I'll say that again.
Just don't put of St. Louis after spirit. That's a little far.
Exactly. And I would focus on the word glory as well. I've asked people what it means when they say the glory, when it says the glory of God. And the typical answer I get, it's the manifestation of all God's power in this and that. They're hitting all around, but they don't actually say light. God is an enlightened being. God is light. Light also means knowledge, but he's also bright. And think of glory, that, like glory streaming, like in the Psalm Silent Night. Glory streaming.
Yeah.
That is focused light beams hitting the ground, just like what happened to Paul on the Damascus Road, just like what happened to the shepherds in the field as they were watching their flocks at night.
Yeah. Yeah. And it, like you said, that concept of being there with it, that concept of being impacted by it, like Paul of Tarsus.
And then when you read this book, prayer and meditation, we can't talk about that enough. You can pray for wisdom, and God will give you wisdom. He can't give it to you all at once, but when that little light goes off, it's something. So yeah. I would ask for God to help open your eyes and ears for that matter, and bring things to light that maybe you haven't realized before. And I have done that, and it works.
Yeah.
He will open your eyes to see exactly, I've had this wrong for the last 30 years. This is what this really means. And it will help you.
Yeah. For me, it's really just looking at more angles of the words, putting commas in different places and seeing different ways that somebody could think about a word, even as a poet, as somebody who writes music, things like that. How would I express it in a different way? Mm. And how would I interpret it? In the nomenclature that I have, in the palette of verbology that I have, because verbology is not a word. I just made that up.
Sounds good.
In my palette now, though.
We're talking about parousia a little bit, and lights. How does Jesus come back? He comes back in the sky, in the air, from the east, with lots of lights. Each of those lights are angels, legions of angels. All these lights will be coming. Now, that will either freak people out or they can accept it.
Yeah.
It's these lights up in the sky that move. Think of crafts. Crafts carry Jesus, they can carry angels, and they can carry God. And crafts can also be called spirit or spirits.
They can drop manna from the sky.
Read the Bible from that standpoint. Anytime you read heaven, just think of the sky. It's the same thing. It will open up your eyes.
I think quite honestly, once again, just having that concept in your mind, and I'm going to pop it up on screen again for our viewers and describe it for our listeners, to have that concept in mind, and this is one reason why I love the New American Bible, because there's the blank holder page on the New American Bible, and then the intro and the table of contents, and then the first page on the opposite of the first page of Genesis is this image that describes to you religiously and philosophically what the world of the ancient Jew was like, and what the ancient Jewish people thought the world of creation was like, and how it was created by God. So, and to see, like I said, once again, the firmament, there's There's the firmament, and then the ocean of heaven outside the firmament, and the lights of heaven inside. Inside the firmament. Not even
pretty
outside
remarkable.
In the ocean of heaven. They are on the inside of the firmament. Stars, moon, sun, everything. And to understand that, when you start hearing about the stars from the perspective of Jewish writers within history, it's important. It's so important to understand things like the concept of Sheol, and the idea that when you died, you were just kind of a wandering spirit until the day of judgment at the end of time. You know, these things are important to understand why people wrote what they wrote. And to know that people like you have gone through the effort to understand that, to bring that to light, and to contemplate that as you write your interpretation of these words, I think it's just fantastic. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
For everything that you've done in your work for writing Crossing the Crevasse. Before we let you go here, of course, as we say at the end of every show, it is time for shameless self-promotion, Wallace. Other than the Dudes and Beer store, dudesandbeer.com/store. See how shameless you can be here? Tell everybody where they can go to get their copy of Crossing the Crevasse, where they can go to start digging their rabbit hole far and wide and deep.
Well, it is available on Amazon in color as well as grayscale and Kindle. The color book, as I've learned, if you put one color picture in a book, the whole book becomes color.
Yeah.
And is exponentially more expensive. So that explains the price difference.
Mm-hmm.
But the color book is actually a little bit larger than the black and white book.
Okay.
I would just throw that out. You can also go to my website, which is just like the title of the book, www.crossingthecrevasse.com. And you can see some upcoming shows that I'll be on, a few shows that I've already been on. You can order an author signed color copy of the book, and you can also go to the Amazon website from there as well.
Fantastic. And, you know, I love this conversation. I love having this conversation. I definitely want to have you back on the show. So sorry for the snafus involved with everything today. Thank you so much for your patience with everything.
Well, you're very welcome.
And
I've enjoyed it immensely.
I was going to say, I hope you enjoyed your time, because I've like, we literally, folks, spent half an episode before the episode sitting here talking, before I was like, man, we gotta hit record. Hold on a second. Typically I'm live on air, and there's that, like, hey, okay, we've got a clock running anyway. But when it's a pre-record, it can be tough. And the show is based on the concept of casual conversation about deep topic. So the fact that we dig deep before we even get on the show is fantastic. And thank you so much for continuing to dig deep tonight, for going back, repeating information, all kinds of stuff. It was so fantastic. I can't wait to have you on again, Wallace.
Thank you, Christopher. I've totally enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Please do hold the line while we close things out, while you're online checking out all the good stuff over at crossingthecrevasse.com and getting your copy of Crossing the Crevasse there. Make sure to stop on by the Dudes and Beer podcast. That is where you can get your copy as well, in the store. That's where you can get all the episodes. That is where you can get that epic new app for your Android device. Stop by and check it out. dudesandbeer.com/app. Until next time, everybody, please, man, it's a crazy world out there. Keep your heads on a swivel, folks. keep your feet on the ground, but keep your soul in the clouds, all right? Whatever you're doing, take care of yourselves, take care of your families, take care of each other. And remember, if you can't be good, be good at it. We'll talk to you soon. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Dudes and Beer Podcast. To listen to our audio streams or chat with us live, download the official Dudes and Beer app for Android and iDevices, available on Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Breach.tv, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more about our sponsors and other podcasts on this network, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com. Thanks for listening, everybody, and until next time, drink responsibly.